Okay, Omigana Timurandasya Gananjana Silakaya Daksu Ramavatam Yena Ismai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Pancha Kapa Guru Yashcha Kripa Shindu Vaibhicha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Greetings from Newburgh, New Brudge. I'm with the Revolve family. And then, I guess it's the day after tomorrow. We have a very nice festival at Gopaki Shores in the evening. Swing festival, myself, Lakshmi Sringapur and Akinchana, Krishna Das. And then a 12-hour kirtan at Yoga Maya Studio, where I lecture regularly. I've begun traveling again. It's always a, I think there's a phrase, traveling makes a man old. I gave a lecture on Sunday about environment on consciousness. And one point that I was making and is that matter has different forms, and according to the form that matter takes, it gives one an ability to conduct different activities. To immobilize, matter has to be in the form of tamas or ignorance. Materialistic activity, matter has to be in the form of rajas or passion. For enlightened thought, matter has to be in the form of goodness. And all matter, both subtle and gross, the mind is also material, are both subtle and gross. So the external environment is in these modes and influence the mind in a similar mode. So the environment in the mode of ignorance tends to immobilize one. The mode of passion tends to energize materialistic activity, and in goodness tends to energize more enlightened thought. And the similarly, the mind is also in different modes of nature, and it's malleable, it's changing. I've discussed this many times, how happiness is the mind in the mode of goodness, the symptom of nature, contentment. Goodness means natural. It's the nature of matter. It's like a machine. Matter is like a machine. It gives you a facility to do various things. And the new machine, the tuned machine, because the purpose of the world is enlightened thought. So the tune that's goodness, and we can see, just like a machine, when you don't take care of it, it deteriorates and it functions differently. So basically, goodness is keeping things in its natural, keeping it in its natural state. It's just like if you have a room and you have many things, but you have just the things that you need, that's the natural state. And if you have a particular place for those things where they belong, that's the natural state. And a room like that will impact the consciousness in its natural state of illumination. It'll give the facility of illumination to the mind, which gives discrimination and facilitates enlightenment. So I was thinking myself that when I am in one place, it is much easier to keep in a natural state, much easier to have things in their proper place. It's so many things. It's much easier to eat naturally according to your needs. Intensely traveling again, just for a short while, but necessity. But you have to be very careful because movement tends to be in the mode of passion, which creates restlessness, which is not good for the activities of enlightenment, which take focus. That's not good for any activity that takes illumination and concentration, such as writing. But it's things that we have to do for a particular purpose. And I guess if we use that the proper way, you can make things natural. Just like I was on the plane, when I was on the plane, it was kind of really interesting. It is not like me, but I went to Nashville, Tennessee for just one day, that Saturday morning, and came back Sunday morning to oblige my good friend, Bibi Govinda Swami, who sincerely requested I come for his first public kirtan in Nashville. And when he actually spoke, it was very, very humble. He told the story of Prabhupada when he came to Calcutta. And I said, something happened there in Prabhupada, and I'm respected all over the world, he said. He said, but, you know, something, you know, one is respected in every place, but if, you know, something like that is home or something. Come in. I'm actually giving this phone class, so I'll come down and I'll come downstairs in about 20 minutes, half hour. Thanks a lot. There you go. No problem. Anyway, it went down there and came back. And then that night I had a program. But it was very, very wonderful, the program. And really, really wonderful. There was Ananta Govinda, Achyuta Gopi, and Kinchana Krishna. And it was, wow, and Bibi Govinda Swami singing. And a really good crowd on a short notice. Rented yoga hall. I met Bibi Govinda Swami's family was there. I'll tell you a joke. I don't know if you'll. Bibi Govinda Swami knows I'm a New Yorker. He was. I don't know how philosophical this class is, but just. Bibi Govinda Swami, you know, he was really happy. I met his mother, and she said I was lovely, and then I met his brothers liked me, and, you know, and he joked at me, he wrote me that, you know, now you have, you're an initiated Southerner. So I wrote him back. I said, B.B. Govindaswamy, now that I'm an initiated Southerner, you have to give me an initiated Southern name. So I want to choose a name. And I said, you can call me the Dalai Rama. But anyway, I don't know. Get it? Okay. boy, where this class is going today. Let's see. But it was such a wonderful, wonderful kirtan. People appreciated so much. It took about 10 minutes before everybody was dancing, and the kirtan went for 3 hours. I spoke on an article that I'm writing called Yoga Made Easy by Music, How Kirtan Works, and discussed, people appreciated the speciality of kirtan, the power of group repetition, the happiness of shared bliss, and the connection between tune and being, how music facilitates focus, which is the purpose of yoga, and of course grace. This is common in Indian philosophy that by respect, by service to the predecessors of your tradition, in what they practice and what they exemplify, and what they teach comes to one. I always talked about that kind of conduit that's created by. So, Sri Chaitanya sang Kirtanaika Pitro. He's the father of Sankirtan. Sankirtan's born from him. So, in our tradition, it's not just the group tradition, it's not just the shared bliss, but because it's so pleasing to Lord Chaitanya, there's an element of grace in congregational chanting that bestows upon you something beyond your own individual yogic effort. Anyway, I spoke about that, and it was just a super memorable and pleasant event. And yeah. And then spoke at Yoga Maya, which those of you in the city, it's a very, very nice place, and it's really a pleasant. And we get a good crowd. I mean, they charge, but we get a good crowd. I mean, between 30 and 40 people so far every time, which is good for philosophy. People are more inclined for music than philosophy. But it's a good crowd, and they were appreciating very practical knowledge, immediately applicable, the science of your environment, the objects of your senses and how they affect the consciousness. If you know the science, you can control your consciousness, or you have more control over your consciousness. Quoted Paramahamsa Yogananda, who said that environment is more powerful than willpower in terms of self-discipline. It's such a powerful effect. And I had that experience when, the last 2 weeks, I was up in my own place, and you know, the lack of just the movement and the organization and the regulation and the ability to where everything has such a place that you organize and the impact. And I wanted to take up this vow that I do in Vrindavan during Kirtan of increased chanting. And I always found it difficult to do in America, but I found it even easier to do up there.
because the first thing I did was work on my environment. And first working on the object of sight so that it'd be natural, simple, and clean rather than dirty and cluttered. And I saw how powerfully that brings the mind, brings the mind to goodness, which is the platform of self-discipline. It's the platform of pensiveness. It's the platform of free will. Very, very important. So people appreciate it very, very practically. I mean, I got a lot of good response. And the next one is going to be on September 19th. And then I'm going to stay for October 10th. I'm staying a little bit longer than I wanted because they're going to have like a half-day yoga fest. But in the evening, they're going to have a concert with Kanamrita. And I'll speak before she does the kirtan on this yoga make easy by music, how kirtan works. I'll also, on September 19th, I'm going to speak on yoga psychology, but basically what I have been speaking on so far is yoga psychology. Yoga is the science of how the mind works. And, of course, in real yoga, the goal is to transcend the mind completely, to live in one's own nature, even beyond the material mind. But the material mind is an instrument. So yoga means how to sharpen that instrument so that you can clearly see the difference between your soul and your body. Without seeing that clearly, you won't be able to act in a way to detach yourself from that conception. So, everything on this, so what I talked about environment on consciousness, now it's yoga psychology. What I'm going to talk about is actions on consciousness. I discussed the full psychology. The first class was karma on consciousness. Then environment on consciousness and actions on consciousness. So it's so important, and I'm going to discuss it in four divisions, very, very practically four divisions. One is dharma. In other words, there's responsive actions to the world in which you live. There's a myriad of situations. What choice do you make? How significant is choice? What choice do you make? And the correct choice is called dharma. I'm a creative thinker. It's in the Shastra, but I try to put it in my own way. Dharma is the appropriate response. It's the appropriate decision. Based on your particular condition, one man's food is another man's poison. Based on who you are, is appropriate decisions to make. Different people make different decisions. Different people have different. Some decisions are better than others for them. But if you make the appropriate decision is the decision. The effect of the appropriate decision is the molding of the mind to a higher level of perception discipline and contentment. And that's what elevation in the modes will mean. Higher perception. You see things more clearly. There's obviously some benefit to that. So what are those actions? It's such an amazing thing, really, what these shastras are. That's why I'm giving these classes, and that's why they're inviting me to give classes. I want to help people make better choices. Because if they make better choices, they'll have higher levels of perception, they'll have higher levels of contentment, and they'll have higher levels of self-discipline. And they will be able to make better decisions. My gratitude to my Guru Maharaj is he gave me knowledge. And with that knowledge, I can make better decisions. And I feel compassion and lament for people who are bereft of knowledge. Because they can't improve their lives. I want to discuss first the actions, the Dharma, and then another action is spiritual practice. You're not just responding, but you're proactive. And basically what sadhana is a particular time during the day you just deal with molding the mind. Not just responding to things that help the mind come to a higher form of perception, but you are actively doing particular activities that mold the mind. And basically it means meditation. Because what meditation does, it's a strategy. The mind has so many desires coming from it, so many thoughts coming from it, generally based on some form of selfishness. So many thoughts are coming impulsively. So what does the yogi do? What does practice do? The strategy is, okay, I cannot negate my thoughts. Let me just think of one thing. And meditation means, because the nature of the mind is that it's always changing. So if your thoughts are always going to change, so let me have the same thought. So what meditation means is you have a thought and you replace it with the next thought, which is the same thought, and the next thought, which is the same thought. So you just focus on just one thought, basically on one object. And what that does is when you neglect thoughts, they tend to recede. So the thoughts are a distortion. The thoughts of selfishness are a distortion of the pure nature of the mind in goodness. So by meditation, it molds your mind to a higher level of perception, contentment, and thought. An intelligent person, he does that in the morning, because then when he has to go out and face the day, he faces the day in a higher level of self-discipline, a higher level of perception, a higher level of satisfaction, a higher level of illumination. And it enables him to use the playing field of the world to advance in his spiritual life or her spiritual life. So I want to discuss that. I want to discuss practice, the Dharma, the practice, then I want to discuss programming. and I'm not going to discuss this right now, but basically, maybe I'll discuss it next week more. But programming means that we have certain attachments and desires which push to be fulfilled, but they are klishta or torturing. In other words, they are desires that reflect a degradation of consciousness. Because the desire, their desires are the mode of ignorance, their desires are the mode of passion. Which are pushing to be fulfilled in a way that is not healthy for the consciousness. So there's a whole science of how to reprogram the mind. Basically to develop good habits. Yeah. And then finally, there's bhakti or devotion as an action. And there's gyan, there's two ways. The spirit is gyan. The gyan is basically philosophical analysis of detachment. There's bhakti or devotion. And the uniqueness about devotion in relationship to the mind, all other practices, all other actions deal with altering the mind to access the pure awareness, where bhakti deals with the energizing of the soul to affect the mind. Anyway, basically, it's such a huge topic, yoga psychology, but basically I want to concentrate on actions in relationship to the mind. Are there any questions? Okay. Okay, I'll do one more thing. I don't know if I did this before, but I started to study a little bit about choice. Very interesting thing. Just like a young child growing up, if parents are too permissive, and they, rather than and give the child too many choices, then it's especially because a child's intelligence is not developed. So if they have too many choices, child needs affection, and a child needs boundaries. Affection creates impressions of hope. It inoculates a child from depression when they get older, because there's so much hope, because their conditioning in the world is that when they act in the world, there's support and there's affection. So
So when they grow older, they tend to approach things in a more positive way. And if there's no boundaries and the child's world is decided by their own choices too much, then the child's world is differs every day depending on how much the child wants or can get. And therefore it creates a conditioning of insecurity. You don't know what your world will be. And it leads to an excessively mental and anxiety-ridden mind. So I listened to this one lecture, and it was an analysis of choice. And they made a point how after a certain level, more choice makes people miserable. And it gave the first example is very interesting. They did a study. I don't know how it works it really points to the benefit of a simple life. I see that. I see what Von Ashram means, what a proper culture means. And one thing this teacher made such an interesting example. The person who's giving the lecture, he said in terms of his students, he has to give, over the last 20 years, he noticed that he has to give 20% less work to the students. And he really understood why. He said because so much of the students' energy is deciding on a proper partner or mate. So much energy goes into that, where in a Von Ashram system, pretty much it was that choice was made in terms of compatibility. It was made at a younger age, so that energy didn't have to go there. And also where one's going to live. One grew up in the village he was born, in which one will die. That energy, you can see the energy did that. And then in terms of occupation, there was employment. There was a simple system where there was employment and there was training in particular employment. So people were also employed. And then, you know, the guru thing, it wasn't that people fell down or you know, there's village gurus and their elders, so many things. So the core activities were resolved. So of course there's different choices, but not at your foundation. And I see in the modern world, you know, how unsettled people are and how much energy that takes away from the energy required for the elevation of consciousness, which is the real purpose of human life. So he was very brilliant, and he gave this experiment. There's something you do in companies where you match funds. So if you invest then in a certain fund, then the company matches you. So basically there's thousands of dollars that the company will give you. So they did a study and they saw, you know, the company would offer a certain amount of mutual funds. They saw for every 10 funds offered, people would choose 2% less. If they were 50 funds, they would choose 10% less.
So there was a paralysis of choice. And then when there's choice, one is never satisfied, because even after you agonize over the myriad of choices, there's some type of regret that I didn't make the best choice. And also the choices increase the expectation, so one is never satisfied with what one has. So it also sometimes takes the choice from those who can make better choices to those who can make poorer choices. For example, in medicine, if you go to the doctor, they say, you can do this, you can do this. And they give you the choice, but you're not the medical authority. And, you know, you can do A and B. You know, they've taken the choice from the authority and given it to the individual, which burdens them for the responsibility that they're often not trained or capable to have. So I'm also studying that. It's an interesting phenomena, and really meditating on simple life and the effect. When I traveled to Nashville, it was like really great. I left my computer back, and all I had was a small bag with a change of clothes. There was really something very simple about reducing my choices, and you know, it's just a simple life. It's a real meditation. And again, it indicates the vision of Prabhupada, who's really at the cutting edge of so many dynamic. Boy, he just had such a clear realization of the place and purpose of everything, and really was just so focused in on the benefits of simple life, high thinking. I was just thinking, too, we're talking about Facebook. I read something on Facebook. They said how it has to be obsolete. They gave reasons why in a couple of years it's got to be obsolete, because I think I'm about finished for today. Unless there's any questions, I tried my best to just share my thoughts. Other than that, my main thought is to really practice filling up our lives with the holy name when we have any time that's not utilize for essential responsibilities. And I was even thinking of that, you know, because what do? I'm on the plane, and I had to get up early. So I was just thinking, boy, this is going to be brutal. I'm going on the plane, and now I'm coming back. But so I wanted to make something very positive about this. You know, the travels. Why don't I just chant all the time? So I'm both there on the way back, but mostly I just chanted. But I really had this sense of a kind of glimpse of reality that when you take shelter of God, and who mercifully appears in the form of the holy name, when you take shelter of God, that He takes care of a lot of the other things that we were spending time on to give us time to actually have that focus. I was just thinking, I was so blissful upstate, just chanting more and simplifying everything, especially diet. And then I'd take this travel and I was chanting. And I just, on the way there and the way back, I just, people, I did,
I in each plane ride, I really felt that Krishna put the person in the plane who was most interested in what I had to offer right next to me. Really wonderful. On the way there, this person, he saw me chanting. I was sitting by the window seat, and he saw me chanting. Asked me what it is, a discussion ensued. He's a very impressive person. And he was a Juilliard graduate who was trained in conducting. And he started a children's choir in Upper Manhattan that travels all around the world and performs at Lincoln Center. Anyway, I was in it, although I don't know, it's just, I'm not a musician, but because I know how the mind works and how music affects the mind, by explaining that to him, he thought I knew a lot about music, but he was so fascinated with such a one. And on the way back, it was amazing. On the way back, this young student at Juilliard, I don't know the connection there, just started to talk to me. And so, anyway, I think I said what I had to say. I'm not preparing classes anymore. I'm trying. Anybody like to ask any questions or say hello?
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Gail? Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Gail.
Yeah.
And it's great to
see. Just real quick, are you saying that these encounters you had on the plane, you felt that that was like Krishna's reciprocation for your focus on the holiness?
I kind of felt a very subtle thing there. That by moving more into shelter of the holy name, that there was some definite reciprocation to show me that Krishna would give me more time to do that activity by facilitating. Certain things were coming to me rather than have to spend energy to go to them. I guess that was kind of my experience, that it was a very subtle thing that I experienced in many ways, in different ways. But that was just, the fact that the most qualified people on the whole plane were just right next to me, So I kind of felt that even though in one sense, my mental energy was going into meditation, that the aspect of my preaching wouldn't decrease, but the facility would be made to share. Basically, I kind of felt this, that the more I become qualified in Krishna consciousness, the more Krishna would make arrangements for me to share it, or would facilitate my desire to share it. That was kind of the message I got. I really felt strongly that way. It was such in just so many ways, because I was in good consciousness. I was chanting, and the person saw me chanting, and he approached me in that way, and it just led to a very wonderful, fascinating person, absolutely fascinating person, very nice, and we exchanged information. That was my realization. I mean, just in a period right now, because I traveled so vigorously, and even my time in Vrindavan, is sometimes
two, three different people a day. I was, you know, I was more active than I was. I felt 2-3 weeks ago that, you know, I really have to focus on deeper meditation in relation to early name. But some reciprocation is there, you know, indicating that this is what I should do, maybe not everyone. But I should increase my relationship and association with Krishna, the form of all. And I guess there's some kind of, you know, super soul type things, reciprocation and things, that confirm to you that this is a good direction that I should take, something like that. Okay, Gail?
Yeah, I think I was also kind of hearing you saying that in general, the principle is that, you know, if you, the more you take shelter of the holy name, you know, even though you may be spending more time, let's say, in meditation, that won't compromise your, you know, I guess your other duties, you know.
That's my experience. Of course, I think there's different dictations for different people in different services. You know, I joke, I don't work, I don't have family, I don't manage anything, so what am I doing all day? You know, my situation is different. But at the same sense, I do have that faith that one moves in that direction. You know, the watering of the root, the leaves and the branches are replenished. There's other things that happen, too, is that it's at least, I guess it's for me, it makes me much more efficient with my time. And it makes the quality of what I do better. And a lot of times, I find this too, that a lot of times my experience in ISKCON, myself included, is that a lot of times, so much is spent on crises and management that are caused by people's own bad decisions. Sometimes, you know, we have to repair a relationship because the contact that we had was not good. You know, so I see that there has to be a proper balance of internal spiritual development, and there's a certain efficiency that will come out of it in the sense that your contacts will be more efficient, especially I'm in a position as a teacher. So I felt that necessity somehow. It was just such a pleasant experience just chanting on the plane. And even though I was chanting, there these people came that were inquiring. So I didn't have to make the effort to get them. They came to me. So all I had to do was stop my chanting. I didn't have to travel. I didn't have to do, you know. It's not that, you know, you just do the bell, hurry, dust, of course, everything comes. That's not what I'm doing anyway. But there's a sense of that, you know, that a reciprocation that came to me, you know, in terms of faith in the holy name, how it will, it is Krishna, and he will facilitate your service of Krishna directly in that way. That's my experience. I'm still thinking about it. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
And Gail, it was great to see you. If, you know, you can put on your calendar September 19th if you're free.
Yes.
Is that the first time you're at that place?
Yes, it was.
Quite a nice place, isn't it? You don't remember.
I remember. I like Kastuba's place.
You like Kastuba's place?
Yeah.
Well, Kastuba's place has deities, of course. Yeah.
Well, I just like the environment. I like the decor. I mean, that resonates with me, that place, yeah.
What's that?
The decor of Kastuba's place, for me, that's me.
I wasn't comparing one to another. I thought it was a nice place. I didn't say it was the best place.
Well, that was my way of just trying to skirt around answering that question.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Thank you, Gail. Different people have different tastes. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's a nice place myself. Okay. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances.
Thank you. Hare Krishna, Amya. Thank you.
Any place you speak is the place I prefer.
Okay. I don't need that. Okay, thank you. Okay. I'll say like David Tritton would say, you can duke it out with Gail after the class. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
No.
Okay, we'll end. Fun Chakopra to the district.